If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I am Jeff Gordon. This is Matthew DeFranks alongside. We're going to talk some hockey. Training camp has started, and some kids are getting a chance to play side-by-side with the big boys. A good first few days to evaluate the kids, and then a good first weekend to evaluate the kids. And then it's going to be getting the team ready. So what's your impression of how they've gone into camp, some of the thoughts that Doug Armstrong had, and then the goals for Jim Montgomery?
Yeah, it's we're done with hypothetical hockey right now, right? We're starting to get to the real thing in terms of actually seeing guys on the ice and seeing what they look like and all that stuff. So that's the exciting part about it. The first day of training camp, I typically don't get a ton out of. They're just running through drills. They haven't played a game yet. They got 60 guys out there. It's not indicative of an opening night lineup that we'll see out there. So the first day, I don't really get a ton out of it. As you mentioned, you know, they do have a bunch of the young prospects playing with NHL guys. I mean, if you look at, you know, Otto Stenberg with Thomas and Snuderud, and then you have Lindstein playing with Falk. You have Broberg with Juracek. Carboneau is on a line with Holloway and Shen. And then they got Dvorsky moved to the wing with Suter and Kyrou. So you have all of these the top picks that they have over the last 3 years. They're all with NHL guys. And so when we talked to Jim Montgomery about it yesterday, he mentioned, yeah, we want to give those guys a chance to play with NHL players, but we also want to give our experienced players a chance to make other guys better, to elevate play from those young guys. And so we'll see, you know, how long that sticks, whether it's just the first 2 days of training camp or whether those can stick in the first couple of games of preseason or whatnot. But it's an interesting thought to start camp. And, you know, I think there's pretty much two schools of thought with training camp lines. One, you put together your NHL lines on the first day, you break them up into different groups, and you give them the 3 weeks to get acclimated, to get used to each other, and you go from there. And then the other thought is to do something like this, where you spread around the young guys to kind of make their training camp worth it in a way. Like if Juracek, you know, plays the game and goes back to junior, he probably doesn't get a ton out of it by being on a pair with another junior guy. But when he's, you know, with Philip Broberg, and he can maybe get something out of that. So yes, it's first day, and excited to see what happens in the future.
I think because Jim Montgomery had time with the group last year, and he knows what the group is pretty much going to look like going into the season. He knows the combinations and such. I think it's a pretty good idea, because you can, you know, you're going to get real evaluation. And you notice watching in practice that every bobble of a puck, every missed pass, every misdirection or failure to follow the pattern that was set out in the practice drill is noticed and addressed by the whether AHL staff, developmental staff, NHL staff. Guys are getting some real-time instruction. They're trying to run drills well. They're trying to run them at a high level. And that's part of it too, right? Where just running drills with guys who are established NHLers with the sort of precision that requires, that's important for these kids to learn.
Yeah, that was something that Monty mentioned yesterday, was that the returnees, they really, you know, they knew what the drills were. They were leading by example in the drills. There is a lot of carryover in that aspect, and he was happy about that. I think, obviously, it's not going to be the crispest execution on the first day. I think no one really expected that, but he was more pleased by kind of the effort in the drills and the knowledge about those things. So yeah, I mean, it's hard sometimes to remember that this is his first training camp with the Blues leading it, because he was around for what, 60 games last year? It's not like it was a late season switch and he only got 20 games and he's still getting to know the people. And no, I mean, he knows pretty much what the group is and how he wants to operate. And this is just basically a 3-week practice that he has a chance to really get his hands on the team.
Well, let's talk about a few of the young guys. Adam Yurchek comes to mind immediately. Interesting to hear Doug Armstrong talk about a conversation he had with agent Alan Walsh about what to do with him for the year. The thought appears to be that he's just going to go back to the O and play full time and be in one place, billet family, be with the team, play those games, and not bounce, with an AHL grind. Interesting, and I think he looks fine out there, but boy, he just needs a full year of hockey. He was gliding around with Broberg. They look like a fine pair. You know, he skates easily, rangy type of guy. Doesn't look too wiry. Looks like he started to put a little bit of weight on. Your thoughts on him, and then I guess the plan for him just to get through this season, with at the major junior level before he makes a jump.
Yeah, Yurchek, I thought, had a good prospect tournament up in Minnesota. That first game against the Wilds, he was looking to shoot everything. I think if there was a puck on the half wall to his right, he was in the middle of the blue line lined up for a one-timer. He was just ready for the entire time. He scored on one of those shots, and I remember at least two other ones, one-timers from the point where he's just looking to shoot. He was looking physical, trying to hit guys and going out of his way to initiate contact. He skated pucks well, very mobile on the back end, a little deception to the way that he skates and carries the puck. So there were a lot of things to like about his game in Minnesota. I think, honestly, the one drawback was in overtime against Chicago when Oliver Moore beat him going wide. But Oliver Moore was great all game that day, and he was one of the top skaters in his draft class. So it's not like he was getting beat by someone who didn't deserve to beat him, so to speak, right? So I liked Yurchek's game up in Minnesota. And as you mentioned, the Blues have a decision with him. He can obviously be in the NHL, but I don't think any of us expect that. I don't think any of us think that he's NHL ready, despite having added 25 pounds since he was drafted. That's something Tim Taylor mentioned. He was drafted at 160. He's now up to 185. So that's a decent amount of weight that he's able to add. But I don't think it's a situation where we think he's going to be in the NHL, right? That no one realistically thinks that. So the options are the AHL, the OHL. He is a teenager, but he is AHL eligible because he was drafted out of Europe. It's not like one of these major junior guys that you're drafted out of major junior and you have to go back to major junior because you're a 19-year-old. So he's eligible to go to the AHL. And when we spoke to Doug Armstrong a couple of days ago, he was like, yeah, we're still deciding what to do with him if he's not here. As you mentioned, Alan Walsh is his representative, and Doug talked about wanting to be maybe in one place for an entire season. I think when you get to the AHL, no one wants to be there, right? No one wants to be in the AHL one step away. Everyone's looking at the NHL. Everyone's looking to see when they can make it up. And so I think that's probably part of the calculus is if he's in Brantford in the OHL, and they're going to have a really good team. They're supposed to be, one of the best teams in the OHL, one of the best teams in Canada. I think up there with probably Blainville, Bossbrand with Justin Carboneau. That's going to be a decent spot where he can get a lot of playing time, get a lot of experience on a good team, maybe go deep in a playoff run. And plus, there's a much greater sense of probably community in the OHL with the Billet family, particularly with someone who is from a different country. I think there are going to be, there's some crossover at Springfield with him being Czech and Dvorsky being Slovakian and Petrarchuk being Slovakian, and Jakub Stancil will probably be there. He's Czech, so there are like some guys that it kind of fit with, but you know, in Brantford, you live with a family. I believe Brantford actually is bringing, they have probably two or three Czechs on their team already. So it's a situation where he doesn't have to feel so isolated or alone sometimes. And that can be tough for a 19-year-old in a different country that is playing hockey at a high level for the first time, really. So a lot to consider with him. But I think, Gordo, I think they probably end up going with the OHL route, even though the AHL route is available for him.
All right, now I'm going to throw this at you, and no two people are exactly alike, but his brother had a hard time in Columbus. You know, it didn't go well. And that development didn't work out, and he got moved. You don't want that repeat. And whether it's the same bloodline, same representation, whatever, you know, you've got to be careful because you don't want to see a guy get derailed. I think David got derailed a bit. You know, I mean, now he's in a team where I'm not sure where he fits with the Wild. But, you know, Columbus did a pretty good job developing young players, but he was not a good example of that.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, similar situation, being, you know, first round pick, a lot of expectations, as you mentioned, same agent. Like this was also you know, represented by Alan Walsh, and yeah, I mean, kind of stalled in Columbus, right? His time, I don't know if it was too early in the AHL or not. I believe he was over there, you know, a year after he was drafted. So yeah, it's a good point. And it is funny, because the tournament was in Minnesota, you know, David Yurecek was there. I mean, he was watching his brother play. He was there and sitting in the stands and watching Adam play. And actually, so I'm looking up Yurecek. He was drafted, or David Yurecek, he was drafted in 22, and he came over immediately to the AHL as an 18-year-old. Played 55 games in Cleveland, and he was back again the next year, playing in the AHL and the NHL, kind of split time there. So yeah, you wonder how much that impacts things, seeing maybe not a rush development path for his brother, but something that didn't end up being right for him in Columbus. So yeah, good point, Gordo.
No, and Doug Armstrong repeats over and over again that the organization does not want to fail the player and develop him. So talk a little bit about Dvorsky. You know, seeing him open on the wing, you know, he has been, you know, I'll try to put unrealistic expectations on him by continually comparing him to Dimitra for that type of a player, who broke in finally at 23, played center in the minors, played, end up on the wing, having a great career. Does it seem, and again, a pace, not so much a pace setter, but Pavel, but just a puck holder and a scorer, a creator. Your thoughts on just, you know, they've kind of set the challenge for him. It's certainly, he will not be rushed, and his skill level is where it is. Interesting, I guess, first few days and weekend for him to see if he can meet the tempo goal and the pace goal that he's going to need to impress the coaches with.
Yeah. I think it's an opportunity that's both open and closed in a way, right? So open in the fact that, yeah, there is a spot on that third line that's available, whether they bump Nick Bjugstad to the wing, whether that's Oscar Sundqvist on the wing, you know, Alexander Texier, Matthew Joseph, Milan Lucic. Like, there are a lot of guys looking at that spot. And so, like, it is an open spot. But it's not like any of those guys are written in pen, right? Like, they're not guys that you think can't be beaten, or, you know, if they are beaten, you know, they'll probably move to a different spot in the lineup or something. So, like, I think Dvorsky does have an opportunity here to come in and win a job. It's just a very narrow path to it, right? I mean, you're looking at a shift into the wing, which is something that we've talked about for, you know, the last year plus with him. Does he take that Robert Thomas route and start on the wing like Robert Thomas did in 1819 with Maroon and Bozak? And right now, that's what it looks like the Blues want to do. When you look at their center depth, it's, you know, Thomas, Schenn, Suter, Sundqvist, Bjugstad. They got the five of those guys that can play center. And it didn't seem like Dvorsky was going to be beating any of those guys out in the middle. So shift him to the wing, kind of simplifies game and allow kind of that offense to shine through more so than the complete game that's required of a center. So, yeah, I still think that he starts the season in Springfield, but I believe it's more of an open-ended question than it was last year at this time where, yeah, I mean, he did have a chance and they were looking for a second line center like that. I mean, we forget that they tried Pavel Buchnevich to start the season as their second line center. And I remember talking to Doug Armstrong, I think before that training camp last year. And the question was, all right, who's your second line center? And he's like, well, are we going to move Buchnevich in there? It could be Shen. It could be Dvorsky. And that's not even a question this year round. Is he going to be ready for a third line wing role? Right. And no knock against Dvorsky. I think he had a good year in the AHL last year, especially as a 19-year-old, one of the youngest players in the league. It's just a statement more so on where the Blues are in their roster development and how their center position looks now a year later versus last year. So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how he does on the wing. I think about it before, you know, yeah, I do understand wing is simpler for a lot of players coming into the NHL, but it's also funny. Like you take this player, you draft him, they've played center all their life, and then you move them to the toughest hockey they've ever played and you put them at a new position. And so I wonder how much that can impact things to how familiar he is with playing wing. And I know he's going to say that he will play anywhere they want, but it is a factor, I guess, learning how to play on the walls and learning where to be defensively and all those things.
Drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that'll change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Another guy in the same boat, Otto Stenberg. He's an interesting guy. You know, he's not the biggest guy in the world, and he skates well, but he doesn't grab your attention that way. Just a really well-rounded guy, and who got his first taste of the A. This is a guy that just seems like he's going to play a long time in the NHL, probably in that middle, you know, third line would be about his speed. But just, you know, I think a guy that probably mature beyond his age in some ways because of all of his international experience. So now he's getting a second taste of the A. Interesting guy. I kind of expect to see him play a few games this year in the NHL.
Yeah, he's the two words that I think about with Otto Stenberg are compete and complete, right? He's a guy who's going to stick his nose in. He wants to be in those battles. He's got a lot of pest in his game. I remember there was I think last summer I was watching some of his games from the Swedish playoffs, and, you know, off a faceoff, you'd see a sneaky slash. You'd see, you know, a mini cross check away from the puck. You'd see some trash talking in between the benches, that kind of pest-like behavior where he does have a physical edge to his game where he wants to stick in there and get on the forecheck and whatnot, but it's not like he's going around running people over and dropping the gloves and all that stuff. So it's a different sort of agitator that he brings. And that's something that you see even when he's not scoring, right? Like, you know when guys aren't scoring, sometimes they don't impact the game. But when he's not scoring, you'll still see him in the battles, engaged and competing on pucks. And, you know, the other part of it being a complete player. I mean, as you mentioned, Gordo, he skates fine. He's not a burner. He's a good playmaker, but he's not Robert Thomas. I mean, he can score goals, but he's not any of these guys who's a sniper, so to speak. So he does a lot of things well, and that gives him the ability to, you know, move up and down the lineup. As also, like, he's a guy who I think you can trust to be on a first line eventually. And he's also a guy who you could trust maybe soon to be in a bottom six role and get introduced that way. Like, he can play different styles of hockey because of how complete his game is. And that's something that Steve Konowalczuk in Springfield really liked about having him last year in towards the last half of the season, was he just said, this guy's just a hockey player, man. This guy, he has a lot of good stuff to his game. And I think Stenberg also realizes that, you know, he knows he can go up and down the lineup. He knows he does still have like a leadership quality to him, given his international experience, as you mentioned, Gordo. And he was the captain of Sweden's, I think it was U18 team. And I think he was on the leadership group for the U20 team. So there's a lot to like about Otto Stenberg. And I think it's not like their games are super similar, him and Jake Neighbors, but just talking about the way that they can move up and down the lineup. You know, Neighbors, I think we're going to see him start on the third line this year. But in a pinch, you need him to play with Thomas and Buchnevich. You're fine with that. I mean, last year he started the year on the fourth line. Or was it the year before? I don't know. I'm getting all my years mixed up now. But when he came into the NHL, he started on the fourth line. He's a guy who could play on the first line. I think Stenberg has that ability as well.
Yeah, it's just, you know, now the last piece for him is just more time in the A, just developing a bit more on the offensive side against, you know, this size rink against adult players. Make sure he develops that piece. The rest of it's there. You just don't want him to, you just don't want to have a ceiling set for him that's lower than, you know, than it needs to be. And so I expect that. Last thing, last prospect to talk about. Boy, Doug Armstrong's put a lot on this guy. Logan Mailloux, I mean, he's a guy that right shot D-man's done his time in the A. Doug says it's his job to lose. You know, he's the one young guy that's in that position. You know, they paid a price to get him. They believe in him. They think he can make the team. They expect him to be a part of the team. Boy, young D-men can have some rocky times. This will be interesting.
Yeah, and I don't know what expectations I have for Logan Mailloux this season. I think you want to put the expectations on him that are kind of necessary for what the trade was. I mean, they traded, you know, Zach Bolduc, 19 goal scorer. He played on the third line, but there was some top six skill there. I mean, he was productive on the power play. Obviously, we know the scarcity effect for wingers versus right-handed defensemen, and that obviously factored into what the trade ended up being. But you want to maybe separate the trade from this year. I think when you want to look at the expectations for Mailloux across 5 years, yeah, you say, all right, let's judge him against Zach Bolduc. But for this year, I personally think he'll be, you know, sheltered on that third pairing with Tyler Tucker. They have a pretty set top four when you look at Fowler, Parayko, Broberg, Falk. And is there a point in the season where Mailloux plays well enough to overtake Falk? I think that's a possibility, but I don't think that's something that anyone's counting on, right? If you're counting on that, then you're kind of counting on a lot from Logan Mailloux, who will be playing in his first NHL season, really. Like, he spent 2 years in the AHL, got a small taste of life in Montreal, but this is a guy who's offensively talented, who's been one of the top defensemen in the AHL the last couple of years. And I think he should have a chance to maybe challenge for some time on the second power play unit. I think we all think Fowler's going to be running the top one. Falk should be having the inside edge on running the second one. But, you know, if they want to switch some units around or get a new look, you know, Mailloux can fit as a quarterback on the second unit. So I wonder how much that comes into play. or whether he's going to be, you know, playing ozone starts against third and fourth lines, maybe getting what 12, 13 minutes a night and coming into the lead that way. I think that would have been probably the way the Blues would have wanted to introduce Broberg into the fold last year. But he went right into a top four role with Justin Falk, and he thrived. So I think there is maybe some things that they can take away from how they developed Broberg in a way last year, although they are different players and different skill sets.
Yeah, I think Doug was wise to point out that, hey, let's not judge this guy this year, because with D-men, every time they play, his number circled. They're coming for him. And Montgomery's going to have to, like you say, shelter him, because it's just going to be so fast and so hard. And just, okay, he's got the tools, but it just a little mistake here, a little mistake there, and your team's down 2-0. You know, such is the life of a young D-man, right? So there's nothing harder than getting a young D-man over the hump. And so it'll be interesting to see how they handle him. All right, final thing on this edition of that front. Let's talk briefly about the old guy, Milan Lucic. Now, when I thought, when they signed him to the PTO, gave him the opportunity to come into camp, I figured, it's just a courtesy. You know, the old man wants to go out and see if he can still play, and somebody's got to take a look at him, and maybe something good will happen. But listening to Doug Armstrong, he seems like he would love to have an element on the team like what Maroon did back in the day, and Maroon could barely move on the ice, and yet he stayed in the league. So Doug has a vision that there's a way, if Milan can play, that he would have some value. It's a long shot, but maybe slightly shorter shot than I thought when they first did it. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think I would have the same kind of thoughts. You know, when we talked about this, the roles in the bottom six, like there's not a lot of them, you know, if we talked about Neighbors and Suter on that third line with that open winger spot, opposite of Neighbors, and then Torpchenko, Sundqvist, Walker, which would leave Bjugstad to be on that third line, or whether it's Torpchenko, Bjugstad, Walker, and you have Sundqvist as an extra, like there's not a lot of spots, and that's before you get to Tetsuya and Joseph. And it's not like those guys can't be waived. I think we've seen it before. Doug Armstrong's not opposed to waiving guys that have, you know, $2-3 million cap hits. So there is maybe a narrower path for Lucic than for Dvorsky that we talked about earlier. But yeah, I think in hearing Doug Armstrong speak about, you know, what they see in Lucic and what he could bring in terms of kind of getting in there and mixing up a little bit, giving guys confidence to try to battle more and more in the corner and stay in that scrum a little bit longer. And I think hearing Doug talk that way, and then also I think hearing Braden Schenn talk yesterday, he said, you know, that's the guy you want on your team. And he said it's an element that maybe they don't always have, and maybe Schenn himself is tired of always having to bring that. I mean, that's always been part of his game, but yeah. you can't look to your second line center to always be the guy mixing it up, right? Even if he is the captain, and that's always what he's done. So if that can alleviate some pressure off Schenn, I think that would help maybe get him through more seasons, given the way he plays. But yeah, so maybe I'm thinking a little bit more that he can maybe realistically make the team after, you know, speaking to Doug and honestly talking to Schenn, and not really the only person that hasn't been like, yeah, we love this guy, we want him, is Jim Montgomery, and that's after one practice. He did have some good things to say about Lucic and talking about the way he was skating and bringing a puck wide, and you know that's something that they didn't really have a lot of in the NHL last year. He mentioned those sorts of things, but he also said this guy's got to win a job, like he's got to beat guys out, he's got to show that he knows where to be defensively, he knows how we play and the identity we play with, and so all those elements matter. But I think there's, you know, there's maybe three elements that are overriding everything. One, he's 37, right? Like this would be one of the older players in the league. Two, he hasn't played organized hockey in 2 years. His last hockey was with Boston 2 years ago. Had an injury, I think, to his ankle, and then had a domestic abuse charge that was ultimately dropped because his wife refused to testify. So Doug Armstrong mentions that they did some background work into Lucic and talking to him, talking to his family, talking to his sponsor. He said he's 22 months sober now, is what Doug Armstrong said. So they, you know, took that risk and believe that he deserves at least a second chance, a shot in a PTO form. So I mean, the fact that he hasn't played in 2 years is another thing. And the third thing, when he was playing with Calgary and Boston, it wasn't that he was all that effective, right? If you look at when he was last someone who could contribute on the score sheet, and we're looking 6, 7, 8 years ago, you know, like it's been quite some time since he's been an NHL player. And that's what we saw in Calgary and Boston with him very briefly. So a lot of factors going against him just based on his history in the NHL. But I think the memory of his playing style will stick around until you see him play another game.
Well, that's Matthew DeFranks. I'm Jeff Gordon. Before we leave, a quick shout out to Nathan Walker, getting a little contract extension, media-friendly guy, team-friendly guy, agitator on the ice. A couple more years of some coin, you know, late in life games played in the NHL. Good for Nathan. Wanted to give him a quick shout out. All right, that's it for us this week. I'm Jeff Gordon. This is Matthew DeFranks. Reminder, you can get all of our extra content in the digital edition of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. That says stltoday.com. Thanks for stopping by and checking us out. Till next time, I'm Jeff. That's Matt. See you later.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.